Yeah, hello.
That's how I pick up the phone when you call me on the phone.
Yeah, hello.
I just got back from Japan. What they say over there is mushy mushy.
Mushy mushy.
I like mushy mushy better than yeah, hello. Anyway, so this is Ben Greenfield making all these annoying sounds for you. And I went to Bellevue. Bill Gates' neighbor over there, this billionaire named Naveen Jain. Brilliant dude. I got a chance to interview him about Viome and ask him a lot of the difficult questions that a lot of people have been wondering about this whole Viome thing and kind of put him in the hot seat. We record this with a video crew in their office, so the audio might sound different than what you're used to. And you can also find some cool videos to go along with it if you go to the show notes, along with a special link to Viome where you can get moved to the front of the line to get your Viome test, because a lot of people wait in a very long line for months because they use Los Alamos Laboratories and they have kind of like a scalability issue as far as you being able to get your tests as fast as you want it. But fear not, if you use the link I've got in the show notes, which I'll tell you during the show, you're going to be good to go. I get laughed at, maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever, but I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this off from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool-looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again, by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris,
My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order.
All right, let's go talk to my buddy, Naveen Jain.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show,
it's the food healthy for you or unhealthy for you. You know what he said? One man's food is another man's poison. And then he realized the way to modulate these functional aspects of the microbiome is food. So he said, let food be thy medicine, let thy medicine be food. This generation, Ben, you and I have a shot at fixing this. And if we don't, we're going to watch our children and grandchildren suffer from chronic diseases. And I'm not the one who's going to be for lack of trying. So I'm going to do everything it takes to prevent and reverse chronic diseases. And that's my moonshot. And I hope we are able to successfully do that.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Well, in addition to anti-aging and longevity and kind of getting the most out of the brain and the body, one of the things that I am most infatuated with, that I have been for a long time, is
me,
the gut. Well, also my friend David, who has already jumped into the conversation, obviously, but it's the gut. And if you heard my last podcast with Naveen, you know very well that he is intimately involved with the microbiome, with the human gut, and the profound impact that it has on human health and disease. I actually, and perhaps we can touch on this later on in the podcast, Naveen, just 2 days ago, I actually drank a giant cup of helminthic worms and parasites from China and Thailand to induce a few so-called old friends into my own gut. So if I do melt into a pile of explosive diarrhea during today's podcast,
we have a microphone to record that.
We do have a microphone to record it and a backup microphone at our feet, which could get messy. So now that we've already forayed into the wonderful world of the gut, I do want to remind you about who Naveen is, because he has been on this podcast before. It was one of our most incredibly popular podcasts of last year, recorded at your house after we handled your moon rocks, which is not meant to mean anything other than the fact that we literally held moon rocks in Naveen's office, because he has had the pleasure and the ability to be able to get his hands on moon rocks from the moon. And we talked all about that in that episode, which you can go back and hear. But we also touched quite a bit on Viome and a lot of Naveen's past successes. His list of accomplishments are nearly too long to list, but I can tell you that just of late, he's been named as Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year, been given the Albert Einstein Technology Medal, received the Ellis Island Medal of Honor, was named the most creative person by Fast Company magazine, which is a pretty incredible accomplishment in and of itself, top 50 philanthropists of 2018, a Humanitarian Innovation Award. He's won a Distinguished Global Thinker Award, awarded the most admired serial entrepreneur, which means that he does not have the ability to focus at all. Top 20 entrepreneurs and Lifetime Achievement Award. And of course, one of his latest projects that we've talked about before and that we're going to take an even deeper dive into today, along with a lot of Naveen's keys to success that he talked about in the last episode that we did with him, is Viome, the gut metatranscriptome and microbiome analysis service that allows you to actually look into your gut health and is focused on changing disease around the world by looking at what's going on inside of your gut. So Naveen and I are going to hit on that. And if you want to actually look at my own biome results, if you want to access any of the previous blog posts, I have a really comprehensive article on biome, and also the previous podcast with Naveen, if you want to get to know his backstory a little bit better, go to the show notes. They're at bengreenfieldfitness.com/biome2. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/biome, V-I-O-M-E, the number 2. So, Naveen, if you're game, I would like to jump in here. One of the things that people were most intrigued about the last time I interviewed you was how you get to know topics so well, so intimately, and then actually create successful businesses, serially, as we've already named, around that topic. You explained this process of diving in via Twitter and then reading a copious number of books and research articles on the topic. Walk us through your mechanisms for actually learning something as well as you learn something so quickly as you do it.
Okay. So first of all, I mean, as we discussed last time, once you become an expert in any field, then you somehow at the point can at most do an incremental improvement on it. That means you're more or less useless when it comes to disrupting a field that you already know a lot about. So if you want to disrupt a field, you have to be a non-expert. That means you have to be able to challenge the foundation of everything that experts have taken it for granted. And I have now started 7 companies, and no 2 companies that I start are ever in the same industry, because you're able to essentially rethink about what the problem is. So my previous company, as you and I discussed last time, was Moon Express, where we really about how do we create a multi-planetary society? How do we save the humanities from a potential extinction? We're not just talking about saving the planet. We may be really arrogant. This planet will be just fine without us. In fact, this planet was just fine before humans came about. So the interesting thing is, if we all on this spacecraft we call lovingly the planet Earth, and it's flying up in the space, if it gets hit by a large asteroid, the whole human species could be wiped out, just like it wiped out dinosaurs, and we could be the dinosaurs, right? So the idea really is, unless we are able to move away from one planet and to be able to distribute ourselves on the Moon and the Mars and the Europa and Titan and Enceladus and all other places, the species may completely get wiped out.
Now, I don't want to rabbit hole too deeply down this hole, yep. But what about, and I've heard people talk about this before, we're spending so much time and so many resources on space.
Yep.
What about the sea? What about deep underneath the ocean in areas we haven't explored yet, right here on our own planet?
And the answer is yes and yes. So that means every time you in life you have a choice, it's not about this or this. It should always be about this and
this. The sea and the moon.
That's right. You can do both of them. And we are doing both of them. I mean, now we are exploring the depth of the oceans that we have never seen before. And we're going to find the organisms. We're going to find the lives. And we're going to find the mechanisms how these lives were created very differently. And then we're going to learn about human body more than we have ever learned. And that's really the key, is to be able to understand how we evolved, and that means understanding how the planet was formed, understanding how the life was formed. And someday we can even discuss this story, or maybe later today, about how humans were created. And this is my tongue-in-cheek story of how humans were created. But it gives you an idea that despite how much we think we know about our human body, we're really a walking, talking microbial ecosystem.
Yeah, if we have time, I'd love to explore a little bit more of that creation story. The other interesting anecdote, of course, is that when it comes to the ocean, I was recently looking into some of the longest living species on the face of the planet. Yeah. There's a particular octopus species and a jellyfish species that have the ability to regenerate their own cells.
Absolutely.
And live this disproportionately long period of time. I think there's a lot of things we can discover in the ocean.
Absolutely, and I think that, as you mentioned, that it completely regenerates the limb exactly. The young part of the limb, that means it's regrowing as if it's the first time it's growing. So it's not going back to your 40-year or 50-year or 100-year-old limb. It's going back to your newborn limb. So imagine you're able to regenerate your own organs, whether it's your own heart, your own kidney, your own liver. So you can drink as much as you want. There's always a new liver waiting for you.
I don't know if anyone remembers Lorena Bobbitt and that whole like that. That technology would have come in pretty handy back then. It would have been a much better strategy than the glass of milk and ice. But anyways, so your strategy for learning things. Yes. Your strategy for learning things.
So, you know, it's about staying intellectually curious. So to me, the day you stop becoming intellectually curious is the day you die. Right? So the only way you essentially are alive is you're constantly learning. So it's never about, you know, taking the horse to the water and making it drink. It's about making them thirsty. So the way I look at the life is that every single person, if you can inspire them to be intellectually curious, you have created a society that will always be learning and moving forward, right? The other part that I really like is that there has never been a time in the human history where individuals and small group of people are able to make an impact that could only be done in the initially kings and the queen and the aristocrats, and then later came by these, you know, nation states and superpowers. The same things that were done by the nation states and superpower are now being done by individuals and a small group of people. Whether it's going to space, it's no longer done by, you know, the nation states. It's being done by private companies, whether it's Elon or Richard or Jeff. They're all going out and doing things that could never be done. NASA did not invent reusable rocket. It is the private companies that innovate because they constantly have the reason to be cheaper, better, faster. Mm-hmm. Same thing is starting to see in other areas of the industries, healthcare. Healthcare is not going to be solved by Obamacare or Trumpcare or Putincare. It's going to be solved by some entrepreneur saying, enough is enough. And we are sick and tired of the system that's constantly victimizing the humanity. When pharmaceutical companies have become parasite on humanity, the humanity must come together to kill the parasite. And that's exactly what is going to happen. Our education system will have to be completely rethought and reimagined that was designed for teaching you skills. And now we are living in the world of exponential technologies where any skill that you learn becomes obsolete by the time you actually graduate. And you have to completely rethink about learning to learn, learning to be able to solve problems, learning to be multidisciplinary rather than unidisciplinary, because problems tend to be multidisciplinary, not unidisciplinary. Right? And coming back to how I learn is that I tend to go deep into the subject when I'm starting a company. So in this particular case, when I started on the company on about human health, and we really wanted to understand, why is it that people get sick? Why is it that people die? Why is it that people age? And idea really comes down to is that it can't be your DNA, because your DNA never changes. Your DNA is always the same from the time you're born to the time
your
you die.
DNA is a computer program essentially made up of alphabet letters.
That's exactly. So your DNA is really the alphabet that can write any story you want it to write. And your RNA is really the story that's being written. So it's not the genes.
The story that you can write or that anyone else can write based
right.
on the idea that our own electrochemical signals that mm-hmm. we produce
right.
based on more quantum physics principles can actually affect the other way people think and feel and believe.
Absolutely true. So, I mean, you know, there's a whole lot more to the things. What I was trying to say was that your genes are not your destiny. Mm-hmm. It is the gene expression is what your destiny
yes.
is. And when you start to think about your gene expression, there's something that I never knew, which is if you look at just the number of cells in the human body, we have more microbial cells in our human body than the human cells, right? That means the cells you get from your mom and dad are less than what we essentially acquire after we are born and through this microbial ecosystem. But that's really nothing. What's really interesting is the human DNA only produces about 22,000 genes. When it comes to the microbes primarily living in our gut, they produce 2 million to 20 million genes. That means at best we are 1% human. That means all the genes that are expressed in our body, less than 1% come from human DNA. And that's really interesting, that if our gene expression is what makes us who we are, and we have completely ignored the largest organ in our body. And that was a big breakthrough for me.
Well, not only have we completely ignored it, but I mean, I'd argue we've, to a certain extent, damaged it.
That's
right. I mean, back to that old friends hypothesis I mentioned earlier, the whole idea is that we have wiped out friendly species mm-hmm. via our era of post-industrialized antibiotic use and antibacterials that have rendered us microbially depleted to a certain extent.
And it is right. Yes, absolutely correct. But I want to also hit on the point in a little bit more nuanced way. It's not necessary that our microbes need to be what they used to be in the past, or they need to be in something, you know, if you look at the aborigines or the people who are living on the Amazonian forest, they have a very different microbes and they have very different set of DNA mutations. And we can essentially get into a little bit more into science if you want. Now, for example, in the modern human DNA, we believe if you have a larger copies of a DNA called APOE4, people believe that is associated with chances of getting a higher disease, Alzheimer's disease.
Alzheimer's, yeah, to a certain extent, Alzheimer's and cardiovascular disease. I'm a carrot, the APOE3-4, right? So that
I am 4-4.
Yeah,
so you
make decisions in life. Right? You don't need as much saturated fat.
However, what they found is very interesting. The people who are living in the Amazonian forest have 6-8 copies of APOE4, and they never get Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. An interesting thing is that gene also tend to be extremely protective gene against infection, since they have a lot of these insects and stuff, a parasite that cause infection. APOE4 actually protects them from these bacterial infection and
similar
mosquito infection.
Similar to like the sickle cell anemia gene.
Exactly.
Against malaria from mosquitoes.
Yeah. So sickle cell was designed to essentially protect you from malaria. And now people essentially get today, obviously, you know, gluten sensitivity and to some extent a lot of the other chronic diseases.
Now, returning back to this concept, though, because I do want to delve into to biome individuality and some of those things that you've talked about, because I, you know, since our last podcast, I've actually gotten some questions about about the sequencing analysis and also about how you can draw correlations and, you know, say X bacteria allows for higher elements of health compared to Y bacteria.
That's just
not true. How does it change from person to person? And I want to get into that, but returning back to this concept of learning, walk me through the actual process. Let's say, well, is there a topic right now?
Yeah.
Obviously, you're very involved in the biome along with aging and longevity. But is there a topic right now that you are very interested in or that you would see yourself being interested in? If so, how would you become expert on that topic?
So first of all, you know, obviously I'm spending a lot of the time, not just microbiome, because microbiome is a piece of the puzzle and it's an important piece of the puzzle. But you also have to look at on the host side. So you're looking at the microbial side and then you have to look at the host side, that how does the microbial ecosystem releasing these enzymes and peptides, and when they are absorbed in your host side, how does the host gene expression changes? How do the metabolites released by the microbiome are causing pro-inflammatory compounds or anti-inflammatory compound? How are they modulating our immune system? Mm-hmm. How are they modulating our mitochondria? And how are they modulating our various gene expression that actually make us who we are, right? So a lot of the times what you're realizing is that even the cardiovascular diseases are not caused by the fat we eat. In fact, it's the lipids that are produced by the microbiome. That lipids are the one that actually causes the hardening of arteries.
Now, just a second. Walk me through that, because most people are under the impression that when you consume a fat, such as, let's say, a triglyceride, that it would spill into the bloodstream, and if energy stores were elevated, could potentially cause excess triglycerides or fatty acid deposition. Yeah. But the microbiome is really discussed as being a player in that scenario. So walk me through what you mean by that.
So imagine every time think of our body as a donut. As you can imagine, you know, so there is a tube that goes through us and there is a whole body around us. Every time you eat a food, who do you think actually ends up digesting it? So think of our microbiome not only as the information processing unit, think of a food as the input information. So food is the information. An information processing unit is not billions, the trillions of these microbes that reside inside us. They digest the food we feed them. In turn, They synthesize them and they metabolize them. And what they release is actually sometimes can be very beneficial to us. So it could be nutrients like short chain fatty acids, or it could be harmful to us such as lipopolysaccharide that could be highly pro-inflammatory.
So the bacteria, you know, there's of course the concept of prebiotics and the idea that those would feed the bacteria. Mm-hmm. But are you saying that carbohydrates, proteins, and amino acid constituents, mm-hmm. fats in general, would also be digested
Absolutely.
By the actual bacteria?
And protein, as a matter of fact. So, okay. you know, so very interesting thing is a lot of the people think that certain foods are good or that certain foods are bad or certain bacteria are good or certain bacteria are bad. There is no such thing. There is no such thing as universal healthy food. A food that's healthy for one person can be completely harmful to another person. And more than that, it's the food, exactly the same food, depending on the quantity that you're eating in, can be beneficial or harmful. For example, protein is a great example. A lot of the people, at least who are listening to this podcast, are into fitness world, and they believe the protein is absolutely essential to building the muscles and really keeping the body healthy. What happens is when you eat a lot of protein, the protein that needs to be digested in the upper intestine essentially starts to go into the large intestine, where it starts to feed the gut microbiome. And these gut microbiome convert these protein using fermentation. So these are called protein fermenters. And these protein fermenters, when they start to ferment protein, they're releasing ammonia and sulfites, and they cause massive amount of gut inflammation.
Really?
Yeah. And not only they essentially make the intestine permeable, that it starts to have a massive amount of gut lining being shedding constantly.
Do you think that is why, to a certain extent, in addition to excess activation of mTOR, pathways, that we would see something like excess protein conferring a decrease in longevity because of the inflammation, the ammonia and sulfite-based inflammation mm-hmm. produced by the microbiome?
Absolutely correct. Right. So you look, that's just one example. So, you know, think of your microbiome again as a detoxing also. It does a lot of detoxification. So if you really think of the people who are living in, say, in China, they are able to eat MSG and they have absolutely no impact on it because their microbiome have essentially evolved to be able to digest, to detox MSG. You and I go eat MSG, we get headaches and we get all kinds of issues, right?
I've heard that's a myth. That was actually propagated against, of all things, almost like a racist myth towards Chinese restaurants wanting to limit, and this could all be an old wives' tale, I don't know. But the idea is that when they induce excitotoxicity in rodent models in like a lab, they give them copious amounts of MSG or glutamic acid. But if we were to eat, let's say, smoked salmon, which would have MSG in it, or even small amounts of Chinese food that has added glutamic acid or umami, that it all winds up being the same thing in the gut.
Remember, it's the gut does a whole bunch of detoxification. So you would see detoxification of the food that we're eating that has toxins in that. So your gut actually does a lot of detoxification. It also converts one type of nutrients into other types of nutrients. So it could eat fiber and turn them into short-chain fatty acids such as butyrate. That's extremely beneficial. It's anti-inflammatory compound, fixes your gut lining. It's able to be absorbed in the blood. And at the host side, it has a lot of anti-inflammatory benefits. Right.
Right.
In addition to that, what's really interesting that what we're seeing, and we'll come back and describe actually how we do it as we get into Wyoming, but one of the things that we found, I mean, personally to me, it was just mind-boggling that people who are vegetarian for generations, their microbiome have evolved to convert carbohydrate into branched-chain amino acids, precursor to protein. So who would have thunk that vegetarians are able to convert the starch and carbs into precursor to proteins?
And is that based on their microbiome?
It's based on their microbiome. So we see them, like people like me who have been a vegetarian for 10 generations.
Yeah.
And we start to see a lot of the people.
I remember having a wonderful Indian vegetarian meal at your house. Yeah. I didn't miss the lamb or the goat or the chicken at all.
No. So interesting thing is they're able to convert them into, and we always wonder, how do vegetarians got protein? And now we know
how do you not build up huge amounts of sarcopenia and muscle loss, et cetera, from protein deficits?
Yeah. And it turns out your microbiome actually makes up for it. And it's just mind-boggling to me that you start to see that, you know, even the things that are supposedly neutral, where they can be beneficial or not, ellagic acid is a great example, right? So pomegranate juice has ellagic acid. And most people believe the pomegranate is really good for you. And the reason they believe is The allergic acid actually is neutral. It doesn't do anything. But if you have the gut microbiome that is able to convert the allergic acid into urolithin A, ULA, that is antioxidative. But if you don't have the gut microbiome that can convert allergic acid into urolithin A, then you, at best, you're pissing off your money or worse. You're harming yourself.
And a big part of that from the pomegranate standpoint is the pomegranate juice only contains a small amount of what the bacteria actually need to produce not only that, but the omega-9s from pomegranate. And so if you have pomegranate, you technically want to figure out a way to eat the skin, to eat the seeds, to get all the oils, and to get the juice itself, because you're actually feeding. Those contain prebiotics, postbiotics.
A lot of phytonutrients.
Well, not postbiotics. They allow the bacteria to produce these postbiotic beneficial compounds you've already alluded to.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think what they're called are modbiotics that you get from the skin, things that modulate the bacteria or keep certain bacteria from growing, what I understand. I'm no pomegranate expert, but I read something fascinating about pomegranates and the idea that you need to eat the whole fruit, including some elements of the skin, to get all the bacterial benefits of it. Now I
and just because of fiber too, by the way.
Yeah, the fiber exactly you're getting from the seed, fiber and the omega-9 oils exactly. The thing that I want to dive into before we talk about biome technology and how you're actually sequencing the biome, and then how someone can intelligently use that information, because I know people are going to be screaming if I don't close this loop, would be back to the concept of learning and your process. This whole idea of following certain Twitter feeds and books.
So
I'm not going to let you off the...
No. I wasn't going to... I just got a habit of just going on a tangent and
I got
to
reel you in.
So first of all, when I started this company, I did not know the difference between the DNA and the RNA, and I had no idea what this microbiome thing was. So first thing I did was I buy probably a dozen books. And here's why. If you only read one book, the author's view becomes your own view. When you start to read 20 or 30 books on a subject, then you're able to synthesize the information from 20 or 30 different perspectives, and then you form your own opinion that's unique from everyone else, because you're now looking at the things from a much farther view. Right? So all of them are looking at the trees, and you're able to look at from the whole forest and say, oh, this is the what whole thing is all about. And you're able to synthesize that information in a way that no author individual has ever been able to synthesize. And then what I do is I look at every single scientific journal, and then I actually subscribe to them on Twitter. And that's all I read.
You subscribe to the journal's feed on Twitter.
On Twitter.
What would be an example of a journal that has a feed?
So every one of them. So microbiome, there are probably 30 journals that are on microbiome alone, and you subscribe to them. Then I subscribe to Nature, New Scientist, Scientist. I mean, every single, if you look at the Guardian.
The Twitter feeds,
Twitter
the magazines
feeds.
Themselves, just the
Twitter
feeds.
Because the point is, the world of offline magazine is gone. And by the time it's printed, the information is already too old. So I'm getting as of today what papers are published this morning. So, for example, I can tell you in the last 2 weeks alone, the latest cutting-edge research that shows that mother's microbiome is now is being shown to have an influence on kid having an autism. Think about that for a second. Mother's microbiome during pregnancy has impact on the children having autism, right? There are a whole bunch of, the research now clearly shows whether the cancer therapy like immunotherapy is going to work or does not work, depends on your gut microbiome. Even if you do a chemotherapy, how do you recover from chemotherapy and rebuild your microbiome? And even able to recover or not able to recover from chemotherapy depends on your gut microbiome, right? And breast cancer being caused by microbiome, the pancreatic cancer being caused by microbiome, the depression, the anxiety, the ADHD. An interesting thing is even PTSD is now shown that people who have a certain gut microbiome have a propensity or tendency to be able to get PTSD.
Now, when you say the microbiome and these diseases, do you mean that a lack of proper amount of bacteria, meaning a desolate bacterial profile, would cause this? Or are you saying specific bacteria in the microbiome, no matter how robust that microbiome is, the balance or the amount of certain bacteria would cause this?
I'm going to have to change the discussion slightly different. Okay. This is why this science has never been able to be successfully deployed. And that's a big change we did. The fact is, everyone in the universe was focused on the taxa, the taxonomy. What organisms are there? What organisms are here in this your gut? The fact is, the organisms in themselves have very little meaning. What really matters is what is they are producing. And interesting thing is, you can have 10 different organisms producing exactly the same thing like butyrate. So it doesn't matter you have this, this, or that, as long as they're all producing butyrate. So what matters is not the taxa, but what actually is being done by these microbiome.
And is there a name for that, by the way?
Yeah, it's called transcriptomics.
Transcriptomics. So no, but I mean, is there a name for something that a microbiome produces?
Yeah, so it's called metabolites.
Metabolites.
Okay. And also the, you know, the peptides and enzymes, and but think they're all metabolites. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
And the interesting thing is, that this part of it is what we call the functional analysis of microbiome rather than what used to be. In the beginning, everybody understood in the last 10 years that microbiome is responsible for almost all of the chronic diseases. There are a few very rare genetic diseases that are caused by the DNA mutations, and you will see them when you're born, but very few. The genetic diseases are called rare diseases. And you know why they're called rare? They're rare, right? So they're... Everything else is really caused by the dysbiosis in the gut. And then when you say dysbiosis, the reason we knew in the last 10 years, in fact, we knew this 2,400 years ago. Remember, Hippocrates, what did he say? All diseases begin in the gut. He was a doctor. Mm-hmm. And then he realized that, like we talked about, there is no such thing as universal healthy food. It really depends on the person. Is it healthy for you or is it unhealthy for you? So it's not the food that's healthy or unhealthy. It's the food healthy for you or unhealthy for you. You know what he said? One man's food is another man's poison. Mm-hmm. And then he realized the way to modulate these functional aspects of the microbiome is food. So he said, let food be thy medicine, let thy medicine be food. So think about it. 2,400 years ago, it took us billions of dollars of research, all that, to come back to the same principle, which is all diseases begin in the gut.
I get laughed at, maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever, but I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum Energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how Quantum Energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know, but all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool-looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. It contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again, by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. That'll give you 20% off your first order.
When you subscribe to a feed on Twitter, are you then chunking those feeds into categories? You have like the microbiome Twitter feed and the-
So I have a scientific Twitter feed. So I'm going to just show it to you, and then okay. You can essentially.
Yeah, I can describe it to folks who are listening via audio.
Yeah. So look at the things here.
So you've actually chunked. You have like a health and longevity Twitter feed. Yeah.
So what happens is I go there and I say, look at my list, and there's a list here, and I can look at all my members. So think about it. The feed from Mighty Microbiome, mm-hmm. Microbiome Articles, Microbiome Movement, Gut Microbiome, Microbiome
These
Center.
These are all microbiome-based journals or individuals you're following on Twitter.
And then it's Nature, right? Uh-huh. The Brain Facts, then Neuroscience, Molecular Biology, Microphagy.
Have you ever written an article about this that teaches people how to categorize, or maybe I'm just a Luddite and I don't know how to categorize certain
but literally you go there, so the people you follow, and you can add them to your own private list and no one else can see it. So this is my private list of different things I'm reading.
So you could have your own series of different private
exactly.
lists.
Exactly. Okay. And that's literally, so now in the morning when I wake up at 4 a.m., first 3 hours, I'm going through everything. By the time the first person wakes up in our household, I have now figured out every latest science research that have come out since I went to sleep. And what is going on. So next day I can go and say, how does it impact what I'm doing?
So I'm writing a book right now on anti-aging and longevity, and I could go and follow, you know, we were talking about Peter Diamandis earlier and the Human Longevity Project and Josh Mitteldorf and I could follow all these people.
But
have them not be getting lumped into or confused by all the other tweets that I'm following.
That's right. Okay. And you can also start to follow a whole bunch of things. So A4M, I mean, you know, all the scientific journal that talking about the things, because most of the times you'll start to see, if you're looking at longevity, it's really the people in the longevity who is going to come up with that ideas. So what I do is I follow all other tangential fields, because you are the one who's going to connect the dots.
Yes.
So I am suddenly, you know, reading that says, you know, the mitochondria during aging changes its expression. It's not going to be showing up in some longevity journal. When I read that, I'm thinking, that's very interesting. Isn't that impact aging?
And you could also ask yourself how the microbiome affects the mitochondria.
Exactly. Because
look for headlines on that.
So most people may not realize that mitochondria is the ancient bacteria captured in the human cell. It has its own DNA. So mitochondria had its own 13 DNA, different from the DNA that is from your mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And something I'm going to tell you that I haven't announced yet, very soon we're going to be also launching, just like we did the microbiome transcriptomes, we're going to be doing for the host side. With a couple of drops of blood, we'll be able to sequence the whole blood transcriptome. And when you do the blood transcriptome, for the first time, we'll be able to look at all gene expression from your mitochondria, all the blood cell gene expression, including all the inflammatory markers. So think about it. Just to do a cytokine panel on the blood test today costs $1,000. My cost is going to be zero, not pennies.
Are you saying that this would be a way to determine whether or not you have healthy mitochondria?
Healthy mitochondria and also inflammation in the host site. So not just the microbiome inflammation, you also, or the gut inflammation.
You can see microbiome inflammation and host inflammation.
And when I mean host inflammation, I mean all the interleukins. So IL-17, right. IL-16, IL-15, IL-1s, and you're looking at CRP, you're looking at TNF-alpha, you're looking at all the transcripts now, right?
When people ask me the top two things that they could track when it comes to their longevity, I typically say
mitochondria, microbiome.
That's not what I typically say.
You tell them telomere, which is wrong.
Usually I say glycemic variability
and
inflammation, both of which are advised heavily by mitochondrial health and by the microbiome. But up until now, wearing a continuous blood glucose monitor, testing your blood glucose is not rocket science, and many people can track glycemic variability. But inflammatory markers, you know, most people are trying to do a quarterly measurement of CRP or something
like that. CRP just
what you're saying is a couple drops of blood, you can analyze
all the transcripts
from an inflammatory standpoint, but also mitochondrial health.
And here's the best part of it. There's no doubt in terms of human longevity and human health, low-grade inflammation is absolutely the key to maintaining good health. Every single chronic disease, as we talked about, from depression, anxiety, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, autoimmune diseases, heart diseases, cancer, diabetes, depression, every one of the chronic diseases, they're just names, but they really come from low-grade chronic inflammation, right? You don't wake up one day and say, honey, last night I was with Ben, and I think I drank too much. I might have caught diabetes today. Mm-hmm. You don't catch diabetes. You don't catch obesity. You don't
drink with Ben a lot chronically.
Chronically. But chronically low-grade inflammation is what causes that. So not only understanding what is going on for human longevity, you have to understand both the microbial side and how the host is being impacted, what gene expressions are actually changing. So what happens is the microbiome, and we'll come back to the story about microbiome, are constantly working with our immune system, and they're constantly working with the host side to change the host for their own benefit. And they work their job to some extent in this symbiotic relationship is to keep the host healthy only to an extent when their life is not in danger. But when it comes to protecting themselves, they would kill the host to protect themselves.
Right.
Or they will at least harm the host because they can now move into the new host. Remember, we are purely a container for these microorganisms, right? So they move from host to host, right?
Fascinating. I want to ask you about biome, but the final question about your learning process. How do you read so many damn books?
Yeah. So one of the things is that I'm actually, I have to admit, I'm a slow reader. And I still can't read in electronic books. For whatever reasons, it may be my age. I'm just not young enough to be able to read electronically. If it's 300-page book, I can't read them on Kindle. I actually always buy a nice hardcover book. And good thing is I travel a lot. So on the plane, I get plenty of chance to go sit down and read a book.
Do you ever do audio? Podcasts,
I love audio podcasts. I love audio books because that's really the easiest way of actually to be able to read the book and read, and you can actually speed them up at 2x or 3x and still make sense out of it.
One of the more profound things related to what you've talked about regarding learning and education, I don't remember who told me this story, and tell me if this is true. You actually, with your own children, when you would attend conferences like business conferences or conferences in the sector that you were working in, would bring your children along and kind of drag them to the conference and just expose them to a lot of big thinkers and like-minded individuals.
That has been actually, honestly, has been one of the key to their today. What they are doing today is just absolutely, absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, you know, our 28-year-old is just absolutely killing it out there, right? Not only when he was 17, he started Kairos. When he went to Wharton, when he left Wharton, he started a company, he sold that company. And now he's working with 8-10 companies that are solving biggest problems facing humanity. He did not get sucked into building Alexa-enabled toilets. He's working on how do we take care of affordable senior care, affordable housing, student loans, and really thinking about these problems very differently, and how do we apply technology to solve these problems. How do we get rid of $45 billion that's sitting in the security deposit because they need a security deposit first last month? And he, just simple fact, he said, why can't we come up with a $10 a month insurance and just not have a security deposit and bring back $45 billion back into the economy?
Did he or your other children ever get bored or embittered or anything like that when you bring them around to expose them to all these ideas?
I mean, and they obviously it's written up, you can see that, you know, our daughter felt that she really wasn't interested in learning about science. And the fact I told her that she gets to decide her passion after she had been exposed to enough things. And when I took her to Singularity University and then when she learned about neuroscience and then she learned about genetics and she said, Dad, I really want to help women, and the only way I can help women is to understand how their brain works, how their genetics works. And today, after she graduated from Stanford, as a Stanford STEM fellow, Stanford Mayfield fellow, board of Stanford Women in Business, and she's a UN ambassador for women empowerment, she's working for head of product for a company that is focused on removing gender bias from hiring using artificial intelligence. So imagine, she's still doing what she wanted to do, but she's using technology to solve that problem now. Amazing. Right? And our youngest one, by the way, the rising senior at Stanford.
That's the key, isn't it? My wife and I were talking about this at dinner last night, about how it's imperative that you expose your child to as many new things as you possibly can, because it's unlikely that on their own there are things that they would discover, from jiu-jitsu to cooking to arts to science, etc. Children will err towards getting involved with that thing that they're most interested or passionate about.
But they won't
know.
That
doesn't mean that you shouldn't expose them to other things. You know. And so, you know, my wife asked me just the other day, do you think the boys will just not like bow hunting, right? Because I'm teaching them how to shoot the bow now, or I'm going to take them on their first hunt down in Hawaii. And I told her, I said, we'll never know unless we expose them to this. And if they go through all of this and they come back and they say, Dad, I want to become a gardener and eat vegetables for the rest of my life, and I never want to go hunting again. Fine, right?
You have to expose them that.
At least we tried. At least we exposed
them. So, by the way, one of the best things I did with all three of our children, I took them to Singularity University. And I tell you that
Singularity University?
It's all about exponential technologies. The technologies that are actually at a curve where they're doubling or quadrupling year over year. So that means these technologies are at a curve that they're going to be so far out in 5 to 10 years. If you don't understand their implications, you will never know how your life is going to be fundamentally changed, right? So I took every one of our kids to Singularity University. And I really believe that if I were you, Ben, there is a Singularity University Global Summit for 2.5 days in San Francisco on August 20th, 22nd. Bring your children in. Just the fact they sit there, even though they're going to nod their head and they're going to say, Dad, what are we doing here? The things they take away after that is going to be in their mind forever. Right? It's going to change how they think. It's going to fundamentally change every problem they look at. They're going to think about the solution. Oh, I just heard someone talk about that. Why can't we apply this here? So every problem becomes simply an opportunity to solve it.
I think we're going to be fly fishing on Lake Coeur d'Alene that weekend, but the next year I'll add that.
Or come to Abundance 360.
Yeah. A360 is on my list. Yeah. Now, Viome, the last time that we spoke, you were using a unique form of sequencing to actually determine what the microbiome actually looks like in the gut, to do almost like a full sequencing of the gut. Bring people up to speed on the technology and what you're doing right now. And also, when you do so, I've had asked to me this question about how you're actually sequencing the full genome of the gut and how this would be different than something that I think is called shotgun sequencing, where you take little snips of DNA and pair them all together, and what traditionally has been like the gold standard of sequencing technology. How is what you're doing different and accurate?
So DNA sequencing is essentially, again, looking at the DNA. That means everything that can potentially happen. What we do is we look at the RNA. So as you know, the DNA is a double-stranded thing, and it's alphabet of anything that can happen. RNA tells you exactly what is currently going on. So we use the RNA analysis, but to analyze the RNA is still the same thing. It's still the shotgun sequencing. It is identical to what the DNA sequencing will be, except we are, instead of doing DNA sequencing, we are doing the RNA sequencing, but underlying technology is still the same, Illumina, identical.
What about the argument that, that RNA could degrade or be unavailable before it even reaches the stool?
Oh, first of all, that so RNA as no, that is only true for the dead RNA, right? So what happens is when you're doing a DNA sequencing, that is actually one of the biggest problems is you see a lot of the dead stuff. So if you were to look at the food that you're eating, whether it's the plant-based food or the meat-based food, you're going to start to see a whole bunch of DNA that's coming from the food. And by the time it goes through your digestive canal, it is all dead. But you'll see the dead DNA because DNA lasts forever. You're going to be able to see all the dead DNA. And you don't know those things are actually there or they're simply dead. RNA, as you know, is obviously degrades. But in the stool, it's still replicating. And we are able to, as soon as you take the stool out and you put in the test tube, we preserve it right away. So instantly it gets preserved. We lyse the cell, we open up the cell, preserve the RNA, and it's gone.
Now, a lot of people, they might not be aware, so we'll inform them now. Biome is a poop test. Basically, you send me a tube,
yeah.
And I don't actually poop in the tube. Yeah. I poop in a
toilet paper.
Hot dog dryer, toilet paper. And you swab it and put it in. Another question that I've gotten is how you can say that a small sample from one daily poop is accurate versus analyzing it over, like taking 3 days worth of stool analysis and getting all the different variables from the stool.
So first of all, there are two parts of the puzzle. One is, can we take it from one place and is it good enough? A second part is, if I do my test today versus I do my test tomorrow, is it going to be much different? So we actually did all of that. So we tested the things in different places in the stool, and then we took the same person, the things, for 30 days in a row. And then we took 20 different people for 30 days in a row and said, just eat
those
what you normally
folks,
just
they,
eat
they,
normally
they're
what
poop
you
in
eat.
A tube for 30 days in a row.
Yeah, and then interesting, I mean, they poop every day, right? So it's not like lock it up.
It's just so much harder to poop when you know you got to put it in a tube. Just
tiny bit. I mean, talking about that. You know, you're talking about like, just touch, right? Anyway, let's not get there too much. But the point is, we were able to say exactly who is this thing belongs to for all 30 days. Because the microbes, even they change a little bit, unless you change your diet drastically. So if you are a vegan and you change your diet to become you start eating meat, or you were completely on this diet and you change it to this diet, then you fundamentally, your microbes will change. Otherwise, we are able to predict that these are the same people this came from. That means there is a minor change, but it's very temporary and transient.
Got it. So you've actually done your own.
We absolutely have done all the study, and we're publishing that paper, by the way.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So once someone has actually tested their stool and they've sent it off to you, what happens next?
So we essentially take that stuff, and again, remember, as soon as you put in the test tube, we have now preserved this RNA, and this RNA preserver would last for at least 30 days, so you can ship it in the regular mail, and it doesn't really matter whether it gets to us tomorrow or it gets us a week from now. So we get the samples from UK, and it's just totally fine. And then we take that sample, and then we prepare it. In the prep side, what we're doing is really amplifying, removing some of the RNA that we know exactly what it is, and we're able to remove what we call housekeeping RNA. And then we sequence everything that's out there. And by sequencing it and amplifying it and sequencing it, we're able to now see exactly how active each of the organisms are. But more importantly, now we can look at these transcripts of what is going on. And by looking at the different pathways, we can say how much of butyrate you are actually producing, how much of LPS you are actually producing, how much of flagella is going on, how much of vitamins, the folic acid or vitamin K you are actually producing. And then we look at what you're capable of producing. And then we go take all of this information that's coming from your RNA test, and then we take all of the information that you provided us, and then we feed it into the artificial.
You see the information, you know, like surveys and questionnaires.
The questionnaire,
you
right?
Answer as you complete the biome.
And you take all of that, then we feed into the artificial intelligence. And the artificial intelligence does a couple of interesting things. We have a complete food ontology. That means we have now the nutrients in each food, what they are. And then we say, if this food were to come in contact with these microbes, what this ecosystem will do? So, for example, if you say, hey, I'm eating spinach. And I say, oh, Ben, spinach is really not going to be good for you. And you say, how can you possibly tell me that Popeye was wrong? Popeye was always right. You need spinach. So Spinach has oxalic acid, oxalate. Unless your microbiome is able to detox oxalate, so if you have oxalobacter that's able to detox oxalate or oxalic acid, it's going to be harmful to you. So we look at this stuff and say, are you actually be able to metabolize this oxalic acid or not? And if you don't, you can't, then we have to say, hold off on that spinach. And then we looked at your poop and say, you know, Ben, you really, really need to cut down on protein because we're seeing a tremendous amount of ammonia and sulfites being produced in your gut because those protein fermenters are fermenting all the protein, excess protein that's not being digested. So you need to ease off on that.
Right. When these changes are then made, what have you been seeing in the follow-up? Like what actually happens as far as either the way the microbiome changes or even the way some of those things we were talking about, like inflammatory markers or glycemic variability changes? How do you actually track this?
So let me give you – so I think you have multiple questions, so I'm going to break it down and answer for you. So obviously, we have people now done it 1, 2, or 3 tests. And then they do, what we see is the inflammation activity is continuing to come down. So we have inflammation activity score in your Viome app. You can see. You can start to see your metabolic flexibility or the metabolic score is going up. Then your digestive efficiency is going up.
And how are you measuring those?
So all those things essentially come up with tens of underlying scores. For each score, there are 10 underlying scores. Under each of those 10 scores, we have thousands of gene expression. So we say these genes are overexpressed 4 times or 8 times. These genes are underexpressed. And then we look at these pathways and say, if these genes are overexpressed and these are underexpressed, are they producing more butyrate or less butyrate? Are they producing more LPS or less LPS?
Got it.
Right.
So you can basically take the gene activity and extrapolate that to, let's say, inflammatory markers without necessarily having someone send in their sample along with, let's say, a tube of blood to test hsCRP and fibrinogen and all these other things.
Those things are on the host side. And I was mentioning that instead of testing that on the host side, we'll again be looking at the transcripts and gene expression. And those gene expressions are the one. Remember, when DNA makes RNA, RNA makes protein, right? So by looking at RNA, we can see exactly what protein is going to be made. So by looking at the blood gene expression, we'll be able to say how much of these inflammatory markers, the cytokine CRP is a great example, C-reactive protein, we'll be able to measure and say how much of CRP is being made.
Will you eventually be able to take this new measurement that you alluded to a while ago, take those that's a blood measurement, right?
Yeah.
So can you take those and then combine them with the microbiome data?
Of course.
To actually see what's going on in the host level even more specifically?
Absolutely.
So
and
you
that
pair
is,
that with the microbiome analysis.
So very soon when we launch the blood transcriptomic, it's going to be called genetic intelligence test. Mm. So we have now the gut intelligence test, and we're going to have a genetic intelligence test. We're going to be able to now take your microbial gene expression, the host cell gene expression, your phenotype information, and then feed that into AI along with the thing, the food ontology, and say how that food is going to be impacting you. If you take this supplement, how is that going to be impacting you? If you take these things, how is that going to be impacting you? The goal of reducing the inflammation, because at the end of the day, if you can get rid of the inflammation, everything else, losing weight. So what's interesting is we don't go focus on diagnosing a disease or reversing a disease. The symptoms, the disease are simply the symptoms of the chronic conditions. People name them these diseases. There is no such thing as disease. They are just your body is not at ease. So it's at dis-ease is what disease is. So when you bring your microbial ecosystem, bring your body into homeostasis and you reduce the inflammation, what pharmaceutical companies do is they love chronic diseases. So what they do, they never want to cure any of the chronic diseases. They don't really care what's causing them. They want to suppress the symptom. So you have autoimmune diseases. What do? Suppress the immune system. Don't worry about what's causing autoimmune diseases. They don't. And guess what? When you suppress the immune system, there'll be 3 more other diseases that's going to be caused by it. They have pills for every one of them. And by the time you get to my age, you're popping more pills than blueberries, and there's another set of problems you get into there.
Right, right. How do you know with the microbiome whether the disease is causing the microbiome mm-hmm. to be deleteriously affected, mm-hmm. or whether a poor microbiome is causing the disease.
So again, it's really, so think of it really as a circular path. So it's not a chicken or egg which came first. It is really, so think, let me give you a better example. Stress. Your gut microbiome makes you essentially highly likely to be able to get depression or stress. When you get stress, you release cortisol right. that changes your microbiome.
I think we talked about this a little bit last time too, about even the fact that, the neurotransmitters produce such as serotonin and dopamine are heavily influenced by the profile.
No, 90% of all the serotonin produced in the human body is produced
90%,
in the gut. In the gut, not in your brain, right? Almost all the neurotransmitters are either produced in the gut or consumed in the gut. So think about it for a second. Your gut and a brain are connected through vagus nerve, mm-hmm. right? And that vagus nerve is bidirectional. So your brain impacts your gut and your gut impacts your brain. And that is a circular path.
From the time you're a fetus, the enteric and central nervous systems are connected.
Yeah. And in fact, even before, think about from an evolution perspective, a lot of the original organism didn't have the brain. They all had the gut. This is, people say this is our secondary brain. Mm-hmm. In fact, evolutionary-wise, that is our primary brain. That is where the brain was evolved. This is our secondary brain.
I know a guy who has done, Jeff Leach, he did a fecal transplant, and I believe he was with the Hazda when he did this, some hunter-gatherer tribe. And it changed his, like the way he felt, his personality almost instantly, probably because of that difference in neurotransmitter. What do you think of this idea of using fecal transplant therapy as a way to change the microbiome?
So first of all, one has to be extremely careful doing that. So if you're living, your microbiome evolves to essentially compensate for the environment that you're living in, right? So if you take a microbiome from a person who's living in a completely different set of environment, eating completely different set of foods, and you take that microbiome, bring into the place.
Granted, I think that was a pretty extreme scenario that he did. I think most people are they're going to like the Tama clinic in Britain, and they're working with a healthy donor. I was just curious if you guys have even ever looked into that with biome or even tested someone who's done it.
There's actually a lot of the stuff they've done in the interspecies transfer, and they have also done the human-to-human transfer. So there are a couple of very interesting cases. They took the microbiome from a human and gave it to the mice, which essentially had no microbiome. Mm-hmm. And if they took it from a fat person, the mice became fat. When they took it from a thin person, the mice became thin. Right, so they are able to show that obesity goes with the microbiome. Mm-hmm. They did the same thing with diabetes. They have done it for many diseases.
Jet lag and circadian rhythm.
So most people don't realize that microbiome have their own circadian rhythm, right? And that's the reason.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, so microbiome has its own circadian rhythm. In fact, there is a whole bunch of interesting thing about microbiome. They communicate both chemically. They do the quorum sensing. They also use electrical signals communicating between themselves. So there's a very interesting paper that came out that how microbiome uses electrical communication to communicate themselves, just like our brain does, right? So this whole idea of one thing we did not touch on that you were asking me, the good bacteria or bad bacteria, that is actually the old science. It is not the bacteria, it is good or bad. It is the ecosystem that's good or bad.
Give me an example.
So C. diff is a great example. C. diff in itself is a terrible bacteria, but it's really, really good in the ecosystem. Almost 80% of the people we tested, they all have a C. diff. But in but remember, it's in a good...
Because most people freak out when they see C. diff on their test.
So, but interesting thing is, in a good ecosystem, the other bacteria are keeping this in check, right? And you need these bacteria to essentially constantly keeping your immune system primed. So what happens is these bacteria are keeping your immune system ready to go. So when there is a parasite, it can attack. And this thing also allows you to renew your gut lining. So pro-inflammation, a little bit of pro-inflammation allows you to renew your gut lining.
So when you talk about immune system modulation and the microbiome's key role in something like C. difficile, even though we would paint that as, you know, in old school terms, as you refer to a bad bacteria, it is in fact imparting the ability to modulate the immune system.
And as a part of a whole good ecosystem, almost every one of them 80% of the people we looked at have C. diff. So my point is, same thing with Akkermansia. Akkermansia may be extremely good in some quantity, in some ecosystem. In other places, we have seen Akkermansia to cause, you know, psoriasis, multiple psoriasis, or a whole bunch of other diseases. So it's really not the bacteria in itself. And that's really my point is, the reason this science hasn't moved forward is because people were using these old science of 16S. Mm-hmm. In 16S, you're looking at the thing at a
16S was the old way that you would normally sequence the microbiome.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't want you to shove people under the bus, but we have to, I'm afraid. But what would be an example of a company or a product that was using 16S?
So I mean, anytime you have essentially got scammed by Ubiome or American Gut Project, or in fact, most other labs, 99% of all labs, just go there, 16S. Because it costs a couple of dollars. So they basically are scamming you, not doing anything.
Gotcha. But you're not getting the full picture at all.
You're getting, first of all, you're missing out all the viruses, phages, RNA viruses, yeast, fungus, mold, and even the bacteria.
What about parasites?
So depends on, I mean, the parasites, if they are bacterial parasites at a genus level.
Okay.
Right? But you're not going to be able to get them at a species level or strain level. Right? So it's like saying, we see a lot of men here. We see a lot of women there. They don't know, is it Ben or Naveen? But even worse, the strain level, are they producing butyrate or they're producing LPS? Are they really a plumber or the electrician? What are they doing?
What are the metabolites?
Yeah, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Right? So that's the reason these companies have really essentially given a bad name to the good science.
When someone finally goes through the biome analysis, and then the food recommendations are generated. Mm-hmm. How does that actually work? Do you just begin to eliminate foods that would feed parts of the microbiome
you don't want
to feed? I mean, how does that actually, because honestly, there's a lot of people that really don't give a crap about what form of sequencing is used. All they want is, what am I supposed to eat? What am I supposed to avoid? So how does all this work with biome?
So by the way, that's what we do. So our whole job is to look at all these signs and give you actionable thing that you can do. So our job is to say, here are the foods that are good for you, and here are the foods that you should minimize, and that's really it is, right? And how do we know what foods are good for you, how to minimize? Remember, I went back, we have the food ontology database. So we say, what are the nutrients in each food? And then we say, how are these foods, when they go to the gut, how are they going to be synthesized, and how are they going to be metabolized? And that's based on that, we can say, all right, for your gut microbiome right now, here's what you need to do. An interesting thing is, when you change your diet, in next 3 to 4 months, your gut microbiome completely changes.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Like, does it change? Then the food recommendations change?
Absolutely.
When you do a follow-up test?
That's right. So if you do a test in 3 to 4 months, and if you change your diet, if you say, I got the recommendation, but I didn't change my diet, don't bother.
So you're saying I might be able to eat green beans.
That's right. And in fact, it changed for me.
Tell me about what changed with you.
So when I started, it said, I need to cut down all the things that actually I thought were healthy for me. Spinach, lentils, legumes, tofu, and oats.
Legumes and lentils are pretty big staples.
Yeah, it is, right? And avocado. So all those things that I thought were healthy for me, total bummer. Did that, cut down. 4 months later, I did a test again.
You cut them. Did you do anything else? Did you introduce certain bacterial strains like probiotics?
No. So I took some probiotics. Uh-huh. I took some probiotics, and obviously I ate a whole lot more, fibrous stuff that was recommended to me.
Did you take specific probiotic strains, like specific to what you were shown to be deficient in?
Or? Exactly. So we took exactly what I needed. So one of the big things is, it's not the probiotic that is really healthy for everyone. As a matter of fact, people who take probiotic could be harming themselves significantly. Because if you have a SIBO and you take probiotic, it's going to make it worse.
Yeah. Right? Or a histamine intolerance.
Or if you already have too much of those bacteria, by giving more, you're going to make it worse. The good thing is 90% of probiotics are so useless, they never actually get hold anyway. Mm-hmm. So sure, I mean, it doesn't make it as much bad, but you're just pissing off or you're shitting off your money.
They never actually see the actual gut.
And that's one of the interesting thing is, I'm looking at another biodefense technology that's coming out of another lab that is able to show that based on this microbial ecosystem that's in your gut or my gut, if you want to introduce this specific strain, what other strains have to go with that, mm-hmm. so they can found a symbiotic relationship, what prebiotic it needs, and then you can package them to say, when it goes down, It has all other, these are the friendly ones that are going to support it. And here are the antagonistic ones. They're going to attack it and how they're going to be able to survive. And you can show and prove that personalized probiotic will work in your gut.
That field is, I mean, we could have a whole different podcast about the field of nutrigenomics and personalized nutrition just based on that alone. Customized supplement delivery.
So we are actually working with this high throughput sequencing for microbeads and microbiome that's going to be able to modify. And God knows why they developed it in this national security lab to introduce a particular set of bacteria for a specific person. But who am I to ask?
Yeah, you're no conspiracy theorist. It's a lot more targeted, though, than eating a dirty pomegranate. So walk me through this part of things. Someone tests.
Yeah.
They send in their stool, or they do a repeat test.
Yeah.
And the app that you have your biome dashboard on, or the online portal that you access will show you your first results, your second results.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the food recommendations and everything kind of change from result to result.
Yes.
How does it work in terms of just the business itself? How do people actually sign up? And what's the testing protocol? Like how have you guys changed? Because, a year ago, I think your business model has changed a little bit.
But not really. No, not really. So what we have done actually is we have learned a lot and we have able to make it more simpler. So when we started, we needed to do a metabolic intelligence test and a gut intelligence.
Metabolic intelligence being the shake that you drink to see what your glycemic response to a meal is.
So we no longer need to do that anymore, because what we did is we took 1,000 people, put them on a continuous glucose monitoring, gave them, if we bought the whole foods, 50,000 different foods, to give it to these people, and we are able to monitor for each set of gut microbiome, how does the glycemic response changes. And now we build the whole machine learning model, so I can now predict that you eat that carrot, I can tell you exactly what's going
to
happen.
Of course, more importantly, I don't have to drink nasty sugar.
That's all gone now.
Breakfast anymore.
And so now the kit is beautiful silver-looking box. Right. Another thing we did is constantly reducing the cost for the people. As you know, this is not something that I'm trying to make money from. This is something to me to be able, for my way of giving back to the humanity of how do we help billions of people live healthy? As you know that, my dad got diagnosed with the pancreatic cancer. And we all know it came from gut microbiome, because there's a very interesting research that shows that how the pancreatic cancer is caused by gut microbiome through leaky gut moving into pancreas, shutting down the immune system, allowing the cancer to grow. And at this point, I wish I had started this company 2 years ago. Because if I had started 2 years earlier, I would have had by now all the information I need to keep him healthy. I don't know how much time he has, honestly, to live right now. But I promise, I don't know if I can save him, but I can promise you that people behind him are going to be saved. And that is my goal, that I am going to focus, and I'm absolutely focused on a simple moonshot. How do we make illness truly a matter of choice? And this chronic illness, we need to be able to eliminate these chronic diseases. We, as this generation, Ben, you and I, have a shot at fixing this. And if we don't, we're going to watch our children and grandchildren suffer from chronic diseases. And I'm not the one is going to be for lack of trying. So I'm going to do everything it takes to prevent and reverse chronic diseases. And that's my moonshot. And I hope we are able to successfully do that.
Pretty noble effort. I think that's a perfect place to wrap it up, man. So if you're listening in, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/biome2. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/biome2. If you want to see what my results look like, I'll put them there. If you want to get a test for yourself, I'll put a link there. And we'll work on a special code that you can use when you go and get your own test that will get you some perks that Naveen and I will talk about later, but I'll work out something for you guys that I'll put in show notes. And I'll also link to my previous episode with Naveen, because I know we didn't get into his history too much, but listen to that one because your mind will be blown about everything else that this guy has done. I, of course, have plenty of work to do myself on setting up my Twitter feeds and amping up my books game and continuing to learn from some of the smartest people on the face of the planet, like Naveen, and just incredibly honored to be able to sit down with you and impress with your passion and your devotion to healing the human race. So thanks, man.
Thank you, Ben.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.